Good afternoon. It is The Bigger Picture and it's Mira Sivasuthi, Vizsla Kumaresan, clinical psychologist in the studio with me. Vizsla, you're part of this organization called Health Equity Initiatives. It's a not-for-profit organization, am I correct?
Yes, that's right.
Okay. And you do a lot of work with refugee people in terms of helping them psychologically, emotionally, that sort of thing. That's what we're going to be discussing. Mm-hmm. We've had a whole day, literally, on this show on refugees. Why not? I mean, just go into their minds and to find out what they were actually going through.
Sure.
Vizsla, what is Health Equity Initiatives before we actually go on to the rest?
Okay. Health Equity Initiatives, or HEI, we are a Malaysian NGO working on the right to health of marginalized communities. And when we say right to health, we address the issues that prevent marginalized communities from accessing health services. And we focus by working on refugees and also our choice of, I mean, we also do a lot of work on mental health. That's our main focus of our work.
Okay. And when did this realization come about that, you know, you needed to set up an organization for these marginalized communities? I mean, we know that refugee people are not recognized in this country.
Mm-hmm.
They're not entitled to education. They're not entitled to health.
Mm-hmm.
They cannot work,
mm-hmm.
right? Three major problems as far as they're concerned. Mm-hmm. But when did you realize you wanted to set this up?
Okay, well, HEI is about 6 years old. And it was first made up of individuals who were volunteering, who were doing all this work voluntarily. And these people were working with different communities and the different sectors, but all of them have been working with marginalized communities for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And then call it kismet, call it, you know, good timing, people came together and decided that they were going to start this organization. And voila, we had, you know, formal structures in place.
Mm-hmm.
And the organization actually took off doing the work that it's doing today. But the work itself began a long time ago. You know, we had very forward-thinking directors and other volunteers in our organization. But why we specifically decided to work with refugees of all the marginalized communities in Malaysia, they conducted a needs assessment called the Participatory Action Research. And among the different communities that were surveyed, it was found that refugees were the ones who were most in need.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, the organization decided to focus the work on refugees.
Okay. In need, meaning in what areas?
Health. You know, like I said...
What aspects of health?
Yeah, it was very clear from the beginning that the organization wanted to work on the right to health. And by health, we were looking at three basic things. It was availability, accessibility, and... what was the third one? Oh, okay. The focus basically has been access to healthcare.
Okay.
You know, Malaysia has a very, very good healthcare system. Many Malaysians take it for granted. Our public health system is actually, I think, one of the better ones in the world. And it is also the most affordable of all healthcare. And what we are advocating for is the right to access the public healthcare system for the marginalized communities.
How do you do that? Because... unless they're a UNHCR card holder, they cannot really access health.
Correct. Well, actually, the UNHCR card affords them a 50% discount of their bills. So what happens in Malaysia is that because refugees aren't recognized as, you know, for the circumstances, they're considered as migrants,
mm-hmm.
and are charged migrant rates, which can sometimes be 20, 30 times what Malaysians are charged. And most refugees cannot afford this. So the UNHCR card affords them a 50% discount of their bill because UNHCR bears the cost. But even then, some of the refugees cannot afford that.
Yeah.
So it is for the refugees without the UNHCR cards where HEI comes in to facilitate the access to healthcare. And, you know, we work in many ways, knock on doors, advocacy, we do face-to-face negotiation, mm-hmm. stuff like that. And we've got case managers and health workers who help with that as well.
Okay. Mm. So do you physically operate from a place, from a premise? Or?
Yes, we do have a premise. And that is, we call it our community center. I think if you visit it, you'll understand why we call it a community center.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, that is where, you know, the physical space, the physical work is done. And also that's also where the main place where counselling for refugees take place.
Mm-hmm.
Counselling, assessment, mental health assessment of refugees. And also now we've got group therapy and support groups for refugees. And we have other big plans for the space, but that, you know, they'll happen in time.
Mm-hmm. It seems to be focused on mental health, mm-hmm. in particular.
Yes.
Why?
Well, okay, I think people often forget that mental health is a very important aspect of health. People tend to focus on the physical health and ignore the mental health. Mm-hmm. But usually, you know, if you have poor mental health, you're going to have very poor physical health as well. And mental health is essential for a person's well-being. And because that's often forgotten, and then the person can't really attain full health without mental health. And the other thing is why HCI chose to work on mental health was because there were already existing services for physical health. And there was a real need and a gap in services for mental health. Mm-hmm. And HCI felt that at that point that was what it could provide. Because on our board, we also have a psychiatrist and counselors volunteering. So the focus of the work then became that.
Okay. Most of them, most of the refugees, on their journey at least to when they flee their home countries, undergo harrowing experiences. I mean,
yes.
I just did a talk set on how this African people actually got onto a boat in 2011. Mm. And nobody, NATO ships were nearby, nobody came to their aid.
Yeah.
This one guy actually saw everyone just die in front of him.
Mm-hmm.
And till this day, he lives in the Netherlands now,
mm-hmm.
Has nightmares even till today. Mm. How do you help them out?
Well, okay, just to talking about that particular refugee, research has shown that even after resettlement, for up to maybe 5 or 6 years, refugees still experience mental health distress with regards to their experience in their home country or their journey to the country of resettlement or refuge. So, I mean, it's real serious issue. And what does HCI do? Well, we have multi-pronged services. It starts from our community-based mental health program, where we have education for communities to create awareness of the importance of mental health.
Mm-hmm.
We talk about depression, anxiety, and stress. Why do we talk about this? It's because it's the most common presenting symptoms among refugees. And we also do is mental health screening. We have a quick screener, and it's been translated into a few of the refugee languages. And based on the scores from the screening, we identify people at mental health risk. So, I mean, this is only looking at symptoms. We're not looking at diagnoses. So we call them in for assessments.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that, you know, we offer them options. One of the options is counseling and therapy. The other options are home-based visits. We have a program called Care and Support, where the coordinator and health workers actually make visits to clients' homes to conduct needs assessments. What's happening in your home? Do you have enough food to eat? You know, things like that. And also providing that social connection, which actually is found to be very, very helpful as well in alleviating mental health distress.
Mm-hmm.
Other things also, we find that some refugees are just so afraid to leave home because of their status in this country.
Mm-hmm.
It's not recognized.
Yep.
You know, they actually really face physical dangers when they leave their homes. And if the fear is, you know, really extreme, that in itself causes mental health distress. So in cases like that also, we have our psychologists going to homes, providing counseling services for the refugees.
What are the main issues the refugees in Malaysia seem to be facing?
Well, the main issue is their status. Because it's unrecognized, they do face quite a bit of problems from authorities. But the other thing is also, you know, because of their status, it really does leave them quite vulnerable to being
Exploited,
that's mm-hmm. the word. And we actually did a study. HCI conducted a research on the experiences of refugees and asylum seekers in Malaysia who have experienced forced labor or trafficking. And we did find a large number of refugees reporting that they were in forced labor situations. And of these refugees, we did a 1,074-person survey. 70% of them reported having symptoms of depression, and 68% of them reported having symptoms of anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm not sure what the local levels are, but you know, like if you look at Malaysians, we don't even reach half this number. We're talking about depression or anxiety. So the community really is vulnerable, not just to physical physical threats, but also mental, emotional, psychological abuse, basically.
Which, if you ask me, is most key, you know. If you don't have people who are, you know, mentally okay, you know, that can bring about a whole load of other issues as well, isn't it?
Yeah, and when essentially what you're looking at is you want to enjoy life. You want to be able to live a life of quality. And you can't have that if you're going to have such vulnerabilities and your psychological safety is constantly attacked or at risk. It is very, very difficult to just live a normal life.
Mm-hmm. When we come back, we'll find out more about health equity initiatives. Vizla Kumarasan is a clinical psychologist, works through health equity initiatives to actually address mental health issues of refugee people here in Malaysia. If you have a question for her, send us a text message. The number is 016-201-9000 or tweet BFM Radio.
This is a download from BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
Good afternoon. It is The Bigger Picture and it's Mira Sivasuthi. It's World Refugee Day 2013. Vizla Kumarasan, clinical psychologist with me. Health Equity Initiatives is a not-for-profit organization that reaches out to refugee and minority communities to help them with mental health issues. Vizla, do you actually have mobile clinics? Do you move around?
No, we don't have mobile clinics. And the reason for that is... the refugee populations are many parts of Malaysia, and sometimes they're not the easiest to locate because they work in hidden sectors like plantations, or they can be really, it's difficult to reach them. They don't have phones, they live in really hard conditions. But the other thing also is that HEI is committed to providing the full range of services. If we provide a mental health education to someone, we also want to be able to make sure they get the run-up to that, which is the mental health services, services to facilitate their well-being. Mm-hmm. And when we are based here, it's difficult for us to go to them or for the refugees to come to us. And because of that, we've chosen to just remain in Kuala Lumpur. But we have networks who also help us identify other refugees outside KL who are facing mental health distress, and we work with them to enable those refugees to access our services.
Okay, so you collaborate with other NGOs?
Not just other NGOs, other refugee community organizations as well.
Okay. What are some of the challenges you face, Vizla, when it comes to counselling refugees?
Mainly it's the barrier to access.
What about language?
We work with translators. Of course, there are some languages where the translators are easier to come by than others, but, you know, eventually we do find the translators. Mm-hmm. But the bottom line is refugees accessing our services or even health services. So for us, we've really had to put on our creative hats. And like I said, we're 5 years old, so we've grown and we've come up with strategies over the years to deal with that. Mm-hmm. We provide home-based counseling services. We also, have arrangements with locals, we know who we can trust to transport refugees to our office and back. We provide transport subsidies, stuff like that, to increase the accessibility to the service.
Who funds you? Where are you getting your money from? That's always a challenge, isn't it, for not-for-profit organizations?
Yeah, it is. You know, we've had to rely on private and international donors. And we do go through the funding cycles and funding process that a lot of NGOs in Malaysia are practicing as well.
All right. But enough to sustain?
Yes, enough to sustain.
Okay. How often do you follow up? I mean, we know with mental health issues, it takes many sessions to actually, help you get back on the right road.
Yes.
How do you follow up? And, are they interested to follow up with your initiative?
Well, that's where we work very, very closely with the Mental Health Promotion Program, the community-based mental health, to really drive home the importance of mental health and to help the community understand what role the counseling plays in their well-being, mm-hmm. In their getting better. And how frequently we provide services, it depends on the severity of the symptoms and also other things like if the person's living in Johor Bahru and needs counselling, we'd have to work around that. They have to work and they can only come get a day off once every 2 weeks. Yep. We'd have to work around that. If it is a woman who's married with 3 young children and her husband works 9 a.m. to 9 p.m., and she needs counseling services, again, we work around those issues as well. And like I said, you know, we've had to really put on our creative hats, you know, think of other ways to provide services. We do home-based service. We do telephone counseling as well. So we have had to evolve our services based on the needs of the communities.
What about your volunteers? I mean, I can imagine that they all have to be qualified, mm-hmm. You know, either mm-hmm. psychologists or psychiatrists. Mm-hmm. Are they happy to come forward and contribute? And is there a high turnover of these volunteers? And then does that even make a difference?
Okay, I mean, unlike other NGOs, we work with a very small group of volunteers. It's because, you know, we are very particular. We're working with a very vulnerable community, number one. So you don't want a situation where people just come and go because it is the you know, mode of the day to work with refugees. I mean, I'm not implying that that's what volunteers are, but we're very careful because when you're working with this population, you want to deliver what you promise. So you have to work with people who you can trust to deliver. And secondly, you know, it's a, like you said, it's a very sort of expertise-oriented area. Our volunteers are mainly our directors and the steering committee members. We have a board, and they are made up of refugee law experts, mental health experts. We have a family physician, a public health expert. So
pretty powerful not-for-profit organization, I have to say. Sounds really big. You have a board.
Well, we have to, you know. They're also, you know, they look after governance and they make sure they are accountable. It's about also the daily running of our organization. So now we also have, you know, not volunteers, but facilitators to help with our mental health outreach as well. So again, you know, we've had a slow process of growing, and our volunteers are, you know, there's a pretty strict criteria for selection. Mm-hmm. It's the selected areas they're working on.
Okay, why refugees? I mean, you have minority groups even in Malaysia. Mm-hmm. Malaysians who need assistance with mental health.
Yes.
Okay. Can they access your services as well?
Well, no. Because of our limited resources, because of you know, mainly limited resources and just the high demand from the refugee population itself, it would be difficult to sort of service more than one community at a time. Like I said, like, you know, we did do the research in the beginning, and we did identify this community as the most needy. And that's why we focus on the work. But, you know, if you look at us, Malaysian healthcare services closely, services are there. Mm. Malaysians can access psychologists, can access psychiatrists, and other services, complementary services in our public health system. Maybe they need to be led in the right direction, but they're there. For the refugee population, it isn't. And that's why we choose to work with them.
Right. Have you had to deal with stigma amongst the local community in your line of work?
Stigma with regards to mental health or refugees?
Both, you know, especially refugees and mental health. Mm.
Okay, well, I think in our work, we've seen a mix of both. There are Malaysians out there who are very aware of the vulnerability of refugees and who exploit that. And on the other hand, we also have met and work with Malaysians who don't, you know, who do favors. Like, we had a taxi driver who felt really bad for the client and drove him halfway around town and decided not to take a fee. And then we have a neighbor of a refugee friend who is aware of the current violence in the community and makes an extra effort to look out for her safety. You know, it's the everyday small things. So it's a mix of both. I can't say what proportion, but like anything else, you know, there are people who choose to exploit and there are people who choose not to.
That's right. HEI is also advocating for changes in policy. Mm-hmm. Could you give me some examples of ways in which policies and laws need to be reorientated to advance health rights of these communities?
Okay. So one of the things that HEI works on is research and advocacy. So we link advocacy very closely with research. And we have already done three pieces of research, which we have used for lobbying purposes. The first is a report on, like I said, forced labor practices and human trafficking and its impact on mental health of refugees. And then we've also got a report on the situation of Afghan refugees in Malaysia. And the most recent, which we actually published last year, was a report on the sexual education needs assessment of school-aged Burmese adolescents.
Yep.
I put the name wrong, but it's all there. Okay.
I mean, as Yanti just said, we have, amongst the Myanmarese community, I mean, they're 92% Myanmarese refugees.
Yes.
But she did say about 23,000 of them are children.
Yeah.
And 12,000 of school-going age.
Yeah, we did a very small study of adolescents in school about the needs of sexual education. So, you know, based on these studies, we have statistics and we've got findings, and it's this that we use to advocate for the rights of refugees. And one of the things that we've been consistent about is recognizing refugees in Malaysia. I mean, I think in the earlier segment you talked about how whether or not refugees can access services if they weren't recognized. That's a question that we ask as well. And the other thing is also, you know, to remove barriers of access to services like healthcare, education, which are absolutely necessary for a person's well-being and for a person's existence. You know, forget about... We're not talking about high needs. This is the most basic of needs. Those are the things that we advocate for. And we use the evidence from our research and also from international research.
You must have a pretty large team, I mean, to do research. Research is not... it's a pretty laborious task.
Yeah.
And need to be funded. And that's something that we lack very much in this country.
We've been quite lucky. Our study on the sex education needs of the children was done in collaboration with a university in the US. It's a public health university. And the other two research papers, the one on Afghan refugees was run completely by volunteers. And the other one on forced labor, we actually did in our current office now when we got special funding for that. Yeah, it was painstaking. It required quite a large team. You know, you're looking at data collection and then analysis of the data, and then putting it all together and figuring it out, and then writing it up, and then publishing it and publicizing it.
Yeah.
So it was a long process.
Who do you share these reports with?
Okay, so we actually had a roundtable discussion for the first forced labor report, and then last year for the sex education needs, and we invited different stakeholders involved in both those issues, both government and non-government, and we had, for both those roundtable discussions, we had day-long meetings, and after that it was, it's been published internationally, it's on our website, and we do use it for our lobbying, whether local or international.
Has government been open to the reports and your findings?
They have been quite receptive, yes. You know, and we actually even had a representative from the government in both our roundtable discussions. So they've been quite eager to participate and to discuss and to, I think, find solutions for the refugees in Malaysia.
Okay, what are their fears? I'm going to ask you, because you've had discussions with them. What are they worried about?
I don't know.
I mean, you've been, UNHCR has been pushing for for us to recognize them, at least to let them work. Not gone very far.
No. But that's what HEI is also advocating for, because what we find is because refugees lack recognition, and that means that they are unable to work, but they still need to eke out a living. Mm-hmm. So they work in the sectors that are... maybe hard to monitor, and they are in our restaurants, they are in our stalls, they are in our construction sites, in our plantations, and it's very difficult to sort of it's unregulated, unmonitored, and it's difficult also to look after their welfare. So what are their fears? I don't know, but I suppose many governments around the world today just very particular about safeguarding borders. I don't know. I can't answer.
Yeah, and also earlier on, I mean, based on UN statistics, I think there's been a surge of refugees going into developing countries as opposed to developed countries. So, I mean,
yes, I think most of the I can't quote statistics right now, but I did read somewhere that the bulk of the refugees are in developing countries rather than developed countries.
That's right. We have one question here. I don't know whether it affects or you will be able to answer it, mm-hmm. but maybe you can point us in the right direction. And this person wants to know, there are a few deranged girls at Jalan Raja Laut loitering around. I mean, who do we call? I mean, is there a number we can call so that someone can go to these girls and maybe help them out?
Deranged girls? Mm. I suppose at that point, your best thing to do would either be call the police, inform the social welfare department, or call the nearest hospital, who should be able to respond to it.
Okay. Going forward, what are you going to be up to at the Health Equity Initiatives? Any more studies or research that you're going to be carrying out?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think there will be lots more research. We haven't yet concretized any at this point, mm-hmm. But we do foresee quite a bit of research. And when it's out, of course, usually we do publicize it. And actually, the press have been pretty good at reporting our events mm-hmm. and quoting from our statistics. So, you know, we do get quite a bit of support in that sense.
Great.
As well.
But you're focusing purely on Malaysian research. Refugees in Malaysia?
Yes. Refugees in Malaysia.
Okay. So if you'd like to contribute to Health Equity Initiatives or volunteer, I mean, is it sounds like you have a tough criteria to even be a volunteer.
We don't want to frighten people away. But no, really, we do encourage people to participate, to actually find out more. Of course, you know, we want to increase awareness, not just on mental health, but also about refugees. And, you know, hopefully talking about the mental health of refugees will also increase Malaysians' awareness of mental health and the importance of mental health for their well-being. And we have a website, and also you can contact us via Facebook, I think. We have a Facebook page.
What's your website?
It's www.healthequityinitiatives.org.my.
Okay, fantastic. Thank you very much for joining me today, Vizla.
Thanks, Mira, for the opportunity.
Vizla Kumarasan, clinical psychologist from the Health Equity Initiatives on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.